We made this.
Welcome to Heard This, the All Things Music podcast. Each week we'll discover and explore a music-related oddity, from conspiracy theories to hidden song meanings, artist histories, lyrical references, and all the drama in between.
Alt-J are one of my all-time favourite bands. From my very first listen to their debut album, An Awesome Wave, I've been a bit obsessed. So I thought it was an absolute must to include an episode about the band in our podcast. You might be familiar with their tracks Tessellate, Breeze Blocks, and Left Hand Free. Trying to sum up the band neatly for this intro was quite tricky. They're described sometimes as alternative, electronic, and sometimes as indie rock and indie pop. Really, their music isn't that easy to categorise. So instead of me trying, here's what Rolling Stone had to say about Alt-J. They're a modern rock band in the sense that they don't really rock at all. A guitar band with no guitar solos. A group who've sold loads of records without ever having had a hit single, who play huge venues but don't particularly have any songs you can sing along to. That last part I definitely disagree with. And band member Gus Unger Hamilton stated, quote, "If you present somebody with the figures on Alt-J, it's mental. Madison Square Garden, The O2, Mercury Prize, number one albums. But 99 people out of 100 don't know who we are. It's all about that 1% who love us. And I'm for sure in that 1%. In this episode, we'll explore the forming of the group and provide an overview of their career and success, as well as looking at some slightly obscure facts about the band. This is really meant as an intro to Alt-J. If you've not heard of them before, or don't know much about them, according to Rolling Stone, even the band's own manager tells them that they're the biggest band that no one's ever heard of, then maybe this episode will inspire you to check them out. Or maybe it won't, and that's okay too, I won't know. And if you're already familiar with them, then you might still learn some geeky facts and find out how much of a super fan I am. So who are Alt-J? They're an alternative band, formed in 2008. The founding members were Joe Newman, Gus Unger Hamilton, Tom Sonny Green, and Gil Sainsbury. They met each other at Leeds University, where they were all students. The group first went by the name Daljeet Dhaliwal, and then Films, but following some confusion with the US band name, The Films, the group ultimately changed their name to Alt-J. Well, they actually changed their name to the Delta symbol. If you press Alt and J on a Mac keyboard, the Delta symbol will appear. Gus spoke about their band name in an FMBQ interview, stating, quote, "Gil discovered the Alt-J shortcut on his computer, which creates the Delta symbol, and he thought we should call our band just the Delta symbol, which is a triangle in the Greek alphabet. This was kind of our band name, but we chose to pronounce it Alt-J, because we knew we were being played on the radio. You really need to give your band a name that's spoken and not just written." So it was going to be said Alt-J and written like a triangle or a delta. But now the delta symbol remains as a sort of masthead for the band. As a nice little follow-on from our previous episode on Beyoncé and the Illuminati, Joe Newman was actually asked in an interview with interviewmagazine.com about the Jay-Z and Illuminati conspiracy theory and whether their use of a triangle was too risky. To which Joe replied, quote, "Oh yeah, there definitely is a strong Illuminati connection," referring to their own triangle preference. "All of us are pretty interested in the Illuminati and tearing it down from the inside. It's why we're called Alt-J, really. We're in cahoots with Jay-Z. He's sitting next to me on the train." And if you want to know a little bit more about the Illuminati, Jay-Z and Beyoncé conspiracy, do check out our previous episode. Of the band members' musical backgrounds and tastes, USA Today Life explains that, quote, "Each bandmate pulls from different musical backgrounds. Green loves metal and grunge, Unger Hamilton has classical training, was a choir boy, and can play the oboe. Newman's love of folk music came from his father." When asked by Interview magazine about his early music infatuation, Joe Newman gave quite a surprising response, stating, quote, "I could not get enough of the Spice Girls. Every time we went on holiday to Cornwall, from the ages 8 to 10, my Spice Girls tape would just be on repeat. Seriously, it's probably in my top 5 albums of all time, just because it's so, so good. Emma Bunton, Baby Spice, was my favourite. I don't think I've ever had as big a crush as I had on her. I wasn't a boy who had posters in his room, but I had a poster of her. I think she's still the love of my life. Just for the record, I suppose my crush has died out. I suppose I could live without Emma Bunton. Listening to their music, I must say I cannot hear the influence of the Spice Girls in there, so I was quite taken aback by his response, but I liked it. Unger Hamilton noted, "We didn't start the band with an idea of how or who we wanted to sound like. We wanted to capture who we are as individuals and as friends." And I think the group has definitely achieved that. In my opinion, their sound's really unique. It's not like they're trying to be someone or trying to sound a particular way. They just create really cool music. The group moved to Cambridge together after graduating from university, where they worked in anonymity for 11 months, spending time rehearsing and developing their music. Gus told USA Today, quote, "It isn't much time when I look back on it, but back then it was the longest time. We moved to Cambridge and lived in a 2-bedroom house, slept in the hallway, got unemployment checks, and we rationed food. And then in 2011, things started to look up for the band." Gus stated, quote, "We got a manager, a lawyer, and a booking agent who basically worked for nothing. They saw promise in us." The group signed a deal with Infectious Records in 2011, and in 2012, the band released their first 2 singles, Matilda and Fitz Pleasure, giving us that first listen to their distinctive and unique sound, which in my opinion at least was unlike anything else out there at the time. Their debut album, An Awesome Wave, was released later that same year, and it went on to win the 2012 Mercury Music Prize, the award given to the best album from the UK and Ireland. The band explained their plans for their Mercury Prize winnings, stating, "We're planning to fly our parents to the same place in the world and buy them all an expensive dinner." And about their Mercury Prize win, Gus stated in 2012, quote, "We had rather a late night, yeah. I think I got in at about 7:30 a.m. We ended up in East London at one of our record label people's flat, where we had a boogie to some seriously smooth R&B. That sounds like a perfect way to celebrate. An Awesome Wave also won an Ivor Novello Album Award for songwriting, was named Album of the Year by BBC Six Music, and received 3 Brit Award nominations. The group's debut album has now gone platinum in the UK and has sold over 1 million copies worldwide. Joe Newman's songwriting is heavily influenced by cinema. The album title, An Awesome Wave, comes from a line in American Psycho, where the main character goes into a restaurant and kind of bluffs his way into getting a table. He didn't actually have a booking and he was trying to look good in front of his friends. And when it turned out they actually had a table available, he explained how the relief washed over him like an awesome wave. Joe states that he takes his inspiration for his songwriting from stories, saying that he responds emotionally to depressing things like death, love, or tragedy more than happy things. Quote, "The thing that I relate to most is the ends of the characters, their demise." If you take their debut album, for example, you can see the variety of story and cinematic influences in those songs. From Matilda being based on the movie Leon by Luc Besson, to Breeze Blocks being inspired by Where the Wild Things Are, which the band members are all fans of. Like I said, this episode will not include a track by track of Alt-J's albums because there's just too much to cover. We would ideally need at least an episode per album, which we might well go on to do. There are a multitude of obscure, bizarre, and really interesting references in Alt-J's music and the influences behind their songs, and it's something that we'd definitely like to explore in more detail in future episodes. According to NME, the band's first ever gig was held in Joe's living room. The group reportedly made mulled wine and someone fainted. It's unclear as to whether the two were connected. And as a contrast from where they were then, the band have some really famous fans now. Both Mumford & Sons and Ellie Goulding have covered Alt-J's song Tessellate, and Miley Cyrus used their song Fitz Pleasure in an interlude at one of her gigs. Alt-J also sampled Miley Cyrus on their track Hunger of the Pine, with the line, "I'm a female rebel." Following the success and subsequent touring schedules and demands after the release of An Awesome Wave, Gil Sainsbury left the band in 2014, but Gus, Joe and Tom stated that they were all still friends with Gil. They vowed to continue their career as a trio, and they did exactly that, delivering to us their sophomore album, This Is All Yours, in 2014. And 3 years later came their album Relaxer, followed by the remixes album Reduxer in 2018. Their latest masterpiece, that is the album titled The Dream, was released in February 2022 and was 100% worth the wait. Joe explained, quote, "We're our harshest critics. We're not one of those bands that bash things out really quickly. We didn't want to look like morons, so we spent ages on the little things." Which helps to explain their process and the length of time between their albums. And I, for one, am definitely happy to wait when they sound like they do. So that's our little intro to Alt-J. I am and will continue to be a massive fan of the band. I've loved their sound since that very first listen, and I still feel like there just isn't really any other music out there that's like Alt-J's work. As I mentioned before, we might well delve into some of the band's obscure song-specific facts, influences and oddities in a later episode of the podcast, because there are just too many to look into here. But hopefully this episode has either given you a flavour of who they are, and maybe even inspired you to check out their music. Or if you were already familiar, and a fan, of course, then we hope you enjoyed. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this episode and about Alt-J in general. Had you heard of them before? Do you absolutely love them? And what's your favourite song or album of the band? I'm really torn between An Awesome Wave and The Dream, but I think if I had to choose, I'd go with The Dream. And if you do want to check out Alt-J, perhaps for the first time, then I would suggest you start with The Dream. Let us know if you'd like to go into more detail on their music in a future episode. What album would you like us to start with? Get in touch with us on Instagram, we're at HeardThisPodcast, or by email at HeardThisPodcast@gmail.com. See you next week for an exploration of another music-related oddity. Heard This is created, written and produced by Sean Davis and me, Lee Cromwell. Heard This is a proud member of the We Made This podcast network.
Hey guys, my name is Tony Black, podcaster and author, and I'm here to tell you about Partisan, a podcast about politics and history in film and entertainment. I'll be joined by guests as we discuss films, TV shows and maybe a little bit more, examining political and historical topics, such as how Elvis intersects with black cultural history.
In Lerman's film, the idea of the black characters are maybe kind of, they're used as catalysts to basically move Elvis forward in his career. I think that's how I saw it.
The rise and fall of Richard Nixon.
It seems to be historians who do agree with this, is that he was the first president that really capitalize on the evangelical vote and politicize them.
The disturbing class satire in society and much, much more. Partisan is free to download on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Partisan Pod. I hope you'll vote with your feet and join us on the journey.